Hello, my name is John Korn. This is the first poem I'm going to read. It's called A Bar, and it's a true story. The bartender said, "My dad worked for NASA." I said, "Oh, yeah?" "Yeah," she said. "And I met that one astronaut, the one who said he saw a UFO. I said, "A lot of them have said that." She said, "Oh, yeah?" "Yeah," I said. "Yeah, but this one walked on the moon." I said, "Well, that narrows it down a little." Buzz Aldrin said he saw a UFO while he walked on the moon, but then he backpedaled and said it was just a pigeon. "He was very nice," she said. "He looks nice. I used to model in Japan," she said. "Oh, yeah?" "Yeah, but it wasn't like porn or anything. They were very nice over there." "They're short over there," I said. "Japan is full of short, nice people." "Would you like another beer?" she asked. "No," I said. "I want a glass of water, and I want a spoon, so I can dig my left eye out and put it into the water." She gives me a glass of water and a spoon. I dig my eye out and drop it into the glass. Then I ask her to drink it. She did. Now I can see everything inside her, her organs, her heart, her brain, and all of her memories. She wasn't lying about modeling in Japan or meeting Buzz Aldrin. Okay, this next one is Edgar Allan Poe. At 3:56 in the morning, when you wake up and after taking a piss, washing your hands, you can take a 5-minute detour, sit at your computer, and write a poem, which really isn't a poem, but only some words stacked up with some line breaks. But don't worry, you're not getting graded, this isn't school, and Random House is not looking at it for publication. You can still write it. You can look around your silent, dimly lit room, and there, next to the fish tank, is the ghost of Edgar Allan Poe, and he's shaking his head. And he's saying, "This poem, it's not good. You should have just went back to bed." And you get really defensive, and you're like, "Fuck off, man." And you stare at Edgar, and his dark, serious eyes stare back. But then his head cracks open like an egg, because he kind of had like a big, lumpy egg head. A drunk with a drunken drunk head. And out of his busted melon, a long, pink brain worm with two black eyes oozes out all bloody and slick with slime, and it falls and slaps sickly onto your carpet like some perverse alien phallus, and it eats the cigarette butts out of your ashtray, which is fine by you because you don't have to clean it now. So you turn back to your computer, and your heart sinks a little because you know he's right. This poem is not that good. Why did you tell him to fuck off? That wasn't nice. But still, you're glad you got to see his big head crack open. Okay, this one's called Black Crow Tea. Yes. He likes Black Crow Tea.
I love it.
I mean the actual tea.
I do that.
Okay. Winter slugs have invaded our brains. They pulsate along the curved inner walls of our skulls, feeding on the worry and anxiety about bills, our health, and our future. I think of a cigarette and a cup of tea, and I need them both. So I go out to buy some tea. I don't like tea bags, really, so I go to a market downtown. And this guy with a crooked nose and thick black eyebrows insists I get the deep, dark space tea. I ask him what the deep, dark space tea is. He says, in China, they successfully merged the DNA of a tea plant with a crow. I say, what? He says, well, it's a crow, but instead of feathers, it grows tea leaves, and you can pluck out the tea feathers and brew it. I said, okay, I'll take a bag. He says, no, 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 you have to buy the crow. I said, okay. I said, okay, he brings out the crow and perches it on my hand, and I walk home. The crow is very calm and seems friendly. I set him on my table, and he stands still. I pluck some tea feathers off him, and he doesn't flinch and seems happy. I brew the tea and drink it down. The first thing that happens is the winter slugs dissolve in my brain. Then the worry of everything seems manageable. I can take care of this shit, I say to myself. I say this loudly again in my apartment. I even point a finger into the air with confidence and repeat it. I can take care of this shit. The crow repeats it. He says, yeah, we can take care of this shit. I call my neighbors over. I say, you gotta try this. We pluck more tea feathers and brew more pots. We drink delicately, like Englishmen with our legs crossed and pinkies out. One guy was wearing a silk scarf, and he kept flipping it from side to side. We nod our heads and go marching down the street, chanting, we can take care of this shit. We really can. Oh, yes, this shit we have here, we can manage it. People fling open their windows. One lady high up in a fire escape has a tea crow also. It's perched on her shoulder. She is burning incense and lighting a tea candle. The shit will be taken care of, she says, and salutes us. We go to the river and jump on someone's boat. People were on the boat. We offer them crow tea. They refuse, so we throw them off. And then we sail away. This one's a poem goes to Hollywood. A skinny poet with red curly hair sits alone in a room and writes a poem and sends it to his agent via Yahoo email. The next morning, before the kid even gets out of bed, the agent bursts into the room. Hey, kid, you got a hell of a poem here. I'm talking fireworks, fucking sparkly fireworks, my talented little money bag. This fucking poem is gonna shoot out like a cannonball and smash the people of America right in their warm, fuck-filled hearts. You can kiss this studio apartment goodbye. You'll be sleeping on tiger skin rugs in a mansion made of elephant tusks. This is a big one, baby. All the studios are on top of it. Bradley Cooper wants to play the spider you refer to on line 4. And Robert De Niro wants to be the voice of the tree in line 6. You got total creative freedom under one condition. You have to add a puppy. In there somewhere in a hot Mexican teenage runaway with a heart of gold and big tits. Otherwise, it's all you, and you are you, and you are the one. So here we go, sign right here. The poet signs a piece of paper. The agent folds it into a paper airplane and shoots it out the window. It flies across Hollywood and lands on Brad Pitt's golden dick. The agent, big phenomenal news, my friend. Now Brad Pitt is attached. He wants to have himself surgically connected to Bradley Cooper to become Bradley Cooper Pitt. And they will read your poem live on Jimmy Fallon. Here's some more money, just sign right here. The poet signs a piece of paper. The agent folds it into a Chinese lantern, sticks a tea light in it, and it floats into the sky and rains down glitter into everyone's eyes across the nation. The agent, the next morning, busts down the door. He grabs the poet, picks him up and shakes him. Oh, you magnificent fuck, your poem won every goddamn award. Time magazine wants an interview. You're going on The View to talk to Whoopi Goldberg. People want to know your views on life. We're going to set you up with some actress to marry, and she'll divorce you in 5 years after you fuck the maid and drunkenly say something semi-sexist on national television. But people will forgive you because you're going to rebound with a poem about a turtle trying to cross traffic. Don't worry about your kids. The nanny will raise them. In your old age, you'll do infomercial scamming old people with shitty health insurance. Yes. You, my friend, are the top of all tops. All right. I might do like one or two more. This is the only one I give context to. I'm a social worker, and this one is about, this one is actually true. There's no eyeballs drinking or anything like that. It's called Lampshade Head. Yellow lampshade day on the corner of Granson Street. Old people sit hunched inside group home with thin memories. wallpapered walls, wheelchair drug solidarity, dust particles swim around eyes, television voices seem deranged here, obscene screams from The Price is Right don't register on 80-year-old faces. I leave Mr. Grotto next to the window. His back is too bad. Can't live on his own anymore. I don't want to leave him here. It's the end of the line, this place. They will drug him into a puddle of half sleep. He will lay in bed and watch the curtains breathe in and out. When I pull the van away, he falls out of my head and I drive home. Nap on the couch, lampshade head. Voices of the neighbors below seep into my dreams. Could be old memories, or I could be in a nursing home, reliving all this in a drugged haze. One more, maybe, and then I'm out of here because I got to go to the bathroom. This is not a great poem, but I never read it live, so I'm just going to read it now. We'll see how it flies. It's called Wonder Mats. Standing on the back porch earlier, I saw this guy riding his bike wearing one of those bicyclist suits. Tight, and it was blue and yellow, and he stopped in front of a laundromat, and he let his bike fall to the ground, took off his helmet, and threw it in a dumpster. He walked into the laundromat. I can see him through the glass doors. He dug around in his pants for change and opened up one of those big dryers, you know, with the big circle window on them. He slugged the quarters in the slot, and then he climbed inside and shut the door. I ran over there. I thought maybe he was trying to kill himself. It was spinning, and I can see blurry circles of blue and yellow swooshing around. I swung open the door, and the blur of clothes deflated and fell flat. Just the clothes. He wasn't in there. And I checked, too. I ran my hand around the inside. No secret doors or anything. Where could he have gone? It puzzled me standing there alone in the laundromat. It puzzled me for the long walk I took afterwards. All night, I couldn't sleep. I just kept thinking about it. Where the hell did he go? Did he evaporate? Did he climb out of another dryer across town? Another country? I just got this weird feeling ever since. I don't feel like going back to work anymore, you know? I just kind of feel like wandering around, checking out different laundromats.